Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here we go with the Media Project. Ladies and gentlemen, it's your opportunity to hear an analysis, commentary, and perhaps even a little insight. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Rosemary Armeo, the head of the journalism program at the University of Albany.
Hello.
Investigative reporter she is and has been and will be. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, etc. So you might say it's the editor, the professor, and the pontificator. So
or we're very glad to professor, and the everything.
We're very glad to be with you here this week. Still part of a new year. Here's a piece of mail from Katrina, who says, "Greetings, I love the Media Project. I'm the publisher of a regional wellness publication, the Healing Springs Journal." And she says, "Listening to the show reminds me that I'm not alone in the effects of media changes. Sometimes when I see my ad numbers, I feel like I've let my advertisers down somehow. But listening to the show helps me see it for what it is. Keep up the good work. If we all stay in integrity, time will show us the next step." That's very optimistic to think that actually good journalism, integrity, and reporting will sustain us.
Ah, but it also may not be optimistic. It may be pessimistic if you think about what she was saying there, which is if we maintain our integrity. She may be casting doubt that we may keep our integrity up. After all, Trump gets to be the president. He brings in all of Wall Street. He brings in the generals. And the pressure goes on. People want to save jobs. I've seen it happen where people say, okay, if that's what we have to do and I have to earn my living and take care of my kids, I'm going to do what I have to do.
People. Well, we make our own fair share of mistakes, too, that don't help. Right now, the Washington Post is being scrutinized by Intercept. That's the Glenn Greenwald publication. And they've made several big errors in reporting about hacking, probable hacking, let me put it that way, by the Russians. And
who apologized, right?
Yeah, they retracted one story and substantially corrected another. And Greenwald recently is wondering whether this is intentional on the part of the Post, a Marty Baron strategy to put out a sensational story, get lots and lots of play, and then kind of back away from it later, caring about it.
Seems like a preposterous notion to me.
It does, but if you hate newspapers and you're looking for a way to bash the liberal press, you got Glenn Greenwald doing it.
It's the liberal press, is it, that points out that there's Russian hacking that pierced the power grid, which is the question, the story that might be in question. I don't understand why that's liberal.
That's one of them. That was the Washington Post story.
I'm sorry, Rex. Could you just...
The story was that it was hacking that had gotten into the power grid of a Vermont utility.
That's the one they had to retire.
That was a mistake. Yes.
And then the other one was about Russian hacking pertaining to the election. And they quoted this site as proof, and it is itself a fake news site.
Okay, but
they didn't check it.
Okay, but now what you have to do, Rosemary, in order to educate me and everybody else who is late to the table here, what in fact happened? Did the Washington Post do this and then get criticized, or did Greenwald do it? I mean, how did that happen?
The Washington Post wrote these two stories, both very flawed and very embarrassing. Greenwald caught them and wrote about it. And to what end, I can't tell you. I think other than his criticizing the media, which is fair, it's a long tradition, we criticize each other. He does not appear to be working for the Russians, against the Russians, doesn't seem to have
a friend named Assange.
No, doesn't seem to have anything in that. And there has been no apology or explanation from the Post. Marty Baron has not.
No, that's not true. They've done corrections, including a front page piece, I think, didn't they? You're saying there's been...
Glenn Greenwald saying that Marty Baron went out and tweeted information information about the stories and never came back and apologized or took responsibility or explained an error.
I think that sounds like his take on things as opposed to the reality of it. It seems to me that there has been, that the Post feels as though it has done, I'm just actually trying to find out.
Yeah, they go back and look it up.
Here's what a spokeswoman for the Post says. We have corrected the story, prominently displayed the correct information after further reporting, evaluated what transpired, and had the appropriate discussions internally to make sure something similar does not happen again. This is a December 31st story. This is on the hackers had
penetrated the grid. What about
the
yeah.
And Greenwald says, while these debacles are embarrassing for the paper, they are also richly rewarding. He's happy about this because journalists aggressively hype and promote the original sensationalistic false stories, ensuring they go viral and after spreading the falsehoods, raise the fear levels, and then they retreat.
Right. And so Greenwald is hardly a press naysayer the way our new government is. And so this is bad. Mistake, or honest or not, it's very bad for the press.
Greenwald was one of the original purveyors of classified information that other people didn't have. Isn't that right?
Well, he was one of the people to whom Edward Snowden leaked information.
Uh-huh. It's how his publication became well-known, really. Uh-huh. He was rather not
the publication came
voter.
Afterward. There wasn't. He worked for The Guardian at the time and then set this up later.
And now we have all of this strange flotsam and jetsam all over the place saying perhaps that Assange, who was talking, who's getting material out to people, may not be everything we thought he was. I was a big fan. Now I'm a little bit afraid of what I'm seeing, that he may be in bed with the Ruskies.
He may be, or one of the articles that we looked at for today's program pointed out that he's made very clear in the past that he was not going to question or investigate when documents appeared for them to leak. They would vet the documents to make sure they were real, but they were not going to check the sources. So for him to now, if he did, tell Trump, say, it didn't come from the Russians, he does not really know that. I doubt that, you know, the ambassador to the United States from Russia went to him and said, here are documents from Vladimir for you. It would have been done through intermediaries. So how would Assange even know it?
Right.
It might just be not that he is in bed with them, which is possible, or it might just be that he was a tool used by the Russians the same way that it increasingly is looking like Trump was.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not willing to say what Trump was or wasn't yet. I can tell you one thing. If it turns out that there was communication, if there was communication between the Trump people and the Russians in any way leading up to this, that is going to turn out to be an impeachable offense.
Well, I don't know that this Congress would do such a thing.
They have a funny view of ethics, we've already discovered.
When it gets to the point, Rex and Professor, when it gets to the point that it really looks like we were played and people are getting telephone calls in their offices all day and all night and they're really mounting up, there'll be an impeachment. Look, just the other day, we saw Congress in the death of night getting together and saying, we're going to get rid of the Ethics Commission that looks at us. People took to their telephones in huge numbers. How did they know to take to their telephones? Us, you, Rex, everybody else putting it out there, and the media playing exactly the right role, and then they got angry and they had to rescind it. Even Trump had to pull out.
That is an important point, I think, in an era people are saying that the news media have lost their power. This would not have been exposed were it not for aggressive reporting. And you could say that what finally was the straw that broke the camel's back, what pushed this over the edge and led the House Republicans to pull back, was the tweet from Donald Trump. But I don't know that Donald Trump would have tweeted on this were there not such an aggressive response on the part of the media.
Well, let us see. Your own newspaper points out correctly, Rex, that it was not the action that Trump actually objected to. It was simply the timing of it. He called the committee, the agency, unfair. And it's plain that it was a temporary win, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. But I think he was covering his behind, to be honest with you. In other words, he has to work with the Republicans in the Congress. He doesn't want them mad. So he comes around and says, yeah, you shouldn't have done it first, but maybe later down the road you can do it. That sort of was a half a loaf.
Talk about this. Here we are. We had the editors of the two most prominent national newspapers on Meet the Press the other day. The editor of the New York Times and the editor of the Wall Street Journal, Dean Baquet, and Jerry Baker. And Jerry Baker made the point that the Wall Street Journal is not going to refer to things that Donald Trump says as lies. He said, and he's had to go actually back into the pages of his own newspaper to write an op-ed saying that, well, I didn't really mean that we're not going to point out that lies are untruths. We're just not going to label them specifically that. It was what it seems to me that he's saying. Is that right?
I heard you say something that I was a little inquisitive about, Rex. I wonder if you and Rosemary could just set me straight on this one also. And that is, you said the two most important newspapers.
I said most prominent national newspaper. I think there are four national newspapers now, right, and that's because the Washington Post has been elevated.
Right.
So we have USA Today, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times.
And when does the USA Today come into this? I mean, do they really?
Yeah, I mean, they're
thing
big.
The about them is that they're outside the hotel room door when you don't.
Well, but their pages also are now published in Gannett papers all over the country, including the Gannett papers in Westchester and Rockland County.
Yeah, but what are they showing?
Well, they
in
did
other
some
words,
good
the Washington
investigative
Post
reporting.
Every day has something good. The New York Times every day has something good. The Wall Street Journal, despite a lot of people having reservations about it when Murdoch bought it, has earned some kudos. But I don't see stuff showing
they
up.
They did important investigations about Trump's business holdings.
Yeah.
They worked really hard on that. They have a very good investigative team and have for years. But I don't think it's going to be actually the big national papers, the old established press. That may be the players. We have news today about BuzzFeed, which hired from Vice News Jason Leopold, who is amazing. He calls himself an FOIA terrorist. He has put in more requests for information from the government than any other news organizations except for the entire New York Times. He alone has done that, and he has gotten a number of scoops. They've been a whole range of them, from Hillary Clinton's emails at the State Department, which certainly were not pro-liberal, to all kinds of stuff about torture, about what Bush and other administrations did with torture. And now he's been hired by BuzzFeed. I think these are the people that I'm going to be watching to
Well,
to come
there's
up with.
So many places now where, because of the internet, there's so many places that are now platforms for great reporting that wouldn't have thought about before. I mean, I'm just looking at a list of people who have moved jobs over the last year, and the places that, you know, there's BuzzFeed and Vox and Politico and
the Huffington Post suddenly has become
a
very viable.
A great Times Union alum is now the editor in chief. Arianna Huffington's replacement, Lydia Polgreen, is now the editor of. She left the New York Times, where she was clearly she was in a masthead position, clearly headed toward the top of the Times or near the top, and she's left to go to HuffPost. So there are lots of places where great work is being done. That said, there is still power in the legacy media. So I go back to this question about how you label what happens when reporters find that there is something that the president of the United States, in the case of Donald Trump, has said that is off the wall, frankly, that is not true. What do you do about that? Jerry Baker, the editor of The Wall Street Journal, said, the question is how we present our reporting. I believe the right approach is to present our readers with the facts, to refrain from labeling leaders' statements as lies. It's to support an unrelenting but not omniscient press. And it seems...
So isn't there a spectrum here, Rex? So in other words, you can say, that's a lie, or you can say, comma, not proven. There's a spectrum from all the way up to, you know, so to very benign.
I think it worked against us when the New York Times, for example, began saying lie in headlines. It is, to those who are not reading the whole story or just looking at the headline or who just want to hate the media to begin with, it looks biased. And you can get away with pointing out a lie without saying it. We've done that for years. The president said today something that's completely unsupported by empirical evidence, or we could find no proof to back up what he said. That's saying it's a lie.
Well,
why is that wrong?
Well, the problem with that, Rosemary, is that not everybody's a liberal arts major from college. So when you say empirical evidence, a lot of people drool.
There's no proof for what the president said.
Excuse me, I haven't just finished this one little thing, Rosemary. I hope you'll just bear with me for a moment. And remember that when
well,
I start...
Well, you're going to go off on empirical, so use a different word that people understand, unsupported by evidence.
Or how about lie?
That's
the headline.
Because lie is something that everybody understands.
But it's also open to interpretation, too. A lie is one of those alarm words that we were taught in journalism school, don't say.
So are you saying that it ruins our credibility
yes.
with certain people
yes.
if we're very, very frank?
Right. Well, tough
so
darts.
That's an interesting question.
I think that all but one newspaper, and that one is owned by a Republican operative, came out against Trump and in the last election, and not just vote for the other person, but the man is dangerous, the man's a liar, the man's crazy. They were like the strongest editorials ever. And what effect did it have? None. And what's the standing of the press right now? It has never been lower. And it's been low, but it's never been lower.
Okay, so
we got to try something new.
So I got to question you on this, Rosemary. That's my duty here, which is if the Daily News did what you were saying, and the New York Times was pretty out there, right?
Yes.
Okay. When history is written 100 years from now, and it turns out that the press did what was right as opposed to what was going to support their reputation, aren't they going to be heroes?
I'm not saying, on the one hand this and on the other hand, Trump supporters said this, his detractors said that. I'm not talking about that kind of journalism. You can be strong and absolutely evidence-based. You go back to the old values. You don't have to call people names if you've got the information.
I think Rosemary's concerned that 100 years from now, there will be no such thing as these entities if the public believes that there is no credibility. If there's a certain huge share of the public, 48% of the people voted for Donald Trump, notwithstanding, at least half of them, notwithstanding the fact that they knew all of these negative things about him, they voted for him anyway.
You think they knew it? I don't. Yeah. And I think it was the obligation of the press. The obligation of the press to do what was right and to wake the American people out of their stupor on this. And if it took the word lie, then so be it.
Well, it's interesting to look at what people knew and didn't know when they voted. There are now Republican congressmen who are saying, we got to be careful with this Obama thing because people didn't know that they were going to lose their health insurance. They didn't realize that was Obamacare.
Yeah.
So they won't remember how they got health insurance, but they sure will remember who took it away. Sorry, where were they when the media was reporting endlessly about it?
I would like to ask that very question. And I would like to know that if you did a stratified scientific survey of people who live in the Empire State where we're broadcasting from right now and say, which city is the capital of New York? You might be very, very surprised. In fact, I believe that's been done.
Are we calling readers and listeners stupid?
No, but I'm telling you, there is a segment of the population that don't know nothing. And you know it and I know it.
So that's the difference between calling them stupid, like liar, and saying they don't know anything.
I didn't say anything.
I said nothing. Providing proof. Yeah, you said it ungrammatically.
So there has to be a way to reach people, doesn't there? There has to be a way to reach people who aren't issue-oriented, let's put it kindly. And is that a very simplified media site? How do you actually, and this is a problem we grapple with all the time, and that is you do, in fact, it's a fundamental principle of journalism. You are not fulfilling your responsibility if your reporting is not accessible to the audience.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And
precisely so
this is why, and this is why you could really make the argument either way, I think, on the word lies. On the one hand, what Alan is saying is be as direct as you can. Go ahead and call a lie a lie. And Rosemary is saying, well, be more nuanced in it because otherwise you're going to be turning people off. And I hate to say this, I sound like a, on the one hand, on the other hand, journalist. You could make the argument either way and say either way is going to be more effective.
On another subject, I would like to raise something that has happened now both in the New York State Senate and in the United States Congress. There are moves that you're not allowed to bring your cell phone in. And you are not you're not allowed to bring your cell phone in, and you are not allowed to take pictures of anything that's going on. And the reason this exists, by the way, and I talked to Elizabeth Esty, who I adore, who is the congresswoman from Connecticut. She says it's because when John Lewis led that band of people down to the well of the House to protest, there were pictures of it all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that our beautiful, wonderful Republican-led Congress deals with this is to say, no one will ever be allowed to take a picture in the chamber again. And by the way, same thing is going on in the New York State Senate right now.
because the legislatures themselves, that is the House, the Senate, and in each in the Assembly, they control the actual feed, the video feed that
right.
is set up, the taxpayers' fund. So the notion that for public access to these chambers, that is provided already, therefore, why do you need these little devices? That's not actually true, because they can shut off the feed if they want to.
Which is what happened with the protest. And
yes.
I do think this is retaliation, and I hope that it will be battled. And there are spy cams that our congresspeople should know about.
Sure.
It can be done.
I'm sure it's going to happen. I was thinking exactly the same thing. You know, my first sabbatical at New Paltz, where I was teaching, was devoted to bringing television cameras to the legislature. And I remember late Stanley Steingott saying to me.
The assembly speaker at the time.
At the time, saying to me, but Alan, who's going to pay for that?
Aha. Answer
well,
is.
But the point really is that we get it, and it's true that unless you have an independent operator running those cameras, it's just another arm of the legislature.
I have to say, by the way, I always get annoyed when this happens in radio programs. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith here from WAMC in Albany. And you can share your point of view by writing WAMC, media at WAMC.org. A lot of times I tune in the middle of a program and I have no idea who the people are. And I'm just saying, identify yourselves. Who are you? This is one of the downfalls, unfortunately, of radio. But it's
we all have downfalls.
We all have
the print radio.
Dear Alan and the Media Project panel, on the question of fake news on social media, should it be censored? This is Clifton in Chester, New York. His answer is no. But all of us who see such questionable reports on whatever platform we use should question the credibility of these stories. Better yet, we should make the effort to do the research, cite the evidence, and call a hoax a hoax. Citing the evidence is important for labeling something fake without evidence. It's just like trying to convince someone by yelling louder. So thank you, Cliff. You know, the difficulty is when you even cite something like Snopes, for example, which is a fact-checking site, then the people who have posted the original fake information will say, oh, yeah, another liberal.
They're Canadian. Yeah. They're liberal. You can't trust them either.
Right.
Who are you citing? And then you say, like, the New York Times. And they'll go, oh, we have to do better than that.
I'm trying to say to both of you, do what's right. Just do what's right and stop with all of this. You know, there used to be this governor of New Jersey. His name was Hughes. And they used to call him Two Buckets Hughes.
Two buckets?
Two buckets, because it was as if he was walking around with a bucket on either shoulder, always trying to equivocate.
He was the governor during the Glasgow Summit. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
When Kosygin came to the U.S.?
That was, two buckets.
Two buckets Hughes. What do you know? This little history lesson, ladies and gentlemen, has been brought to you by your elderly panel here. So listen, youth professors, Rosemary actively teaching, Dr. Shartok having many times done, journalism grads, it says here, this is a piece by Al Tompkins of the Poynter Institute, headlined, Why New Journalism Grads Are Optimistic About 2017. Why in the world would journalism graduates be optimistic at this point?
Well, it's so interesting because there are fewer jobs, and we all know that. The problem is that you go into these spikes. We're having one right now. We're looking for a bureau chief for our Berkshire Bureau, a very prestigious place. We're not finding good people applying. We're not finding a lot of people applying for that job. So we're in a full employment spike right now. But the other thing is, you say to a student, what do you want to do when you grow up? And they're going to say what comes to their head. I want to be a journalist. Hmm. I mean, I want to be a journalist. That hasn't changed, has it, Rosemary?
I don't think so. I think part of it is you don't have to do a lot of math. I think that plays a huge part in it.
Well, actually, you do, but you should, but you don't.
You should, but they don't. You can get away with it. That's my cynical answer. When I look at it, we have lots of students. Why do they come into journalism? It is important, and I think they saw that in this election. I do think that there are more kids who, like we did back in the 70s in the shadow of Watergate, wanted to go out and change the world. And journalism is still one of the ways to do that.
No, it doesn't pay that well.
Yeah, it doesn't pay that well, and it isn't secure. But the other thing is, at this time, what job is? What do you go into right now where, okay, I'm set for life. Steel making, that used to be it. IT, it's changing all the time. There's no certainty anywhere. So the journalism uncertainty is less threatening than I think it had been.
And it's not such a bad thing that it's a career that doesn't pay really well, because then you're actually getting people from modest means, perhaps, who don't have aspirations for a lot of money. And that may help us to do a better job of storytelling on behalf of the people who are that sort of forgotten core that we're saying we didn't hear enough from Trump campaign.
But there's something else to be said here, and that is after they're done, not making a lot of money being reporters, then they go on to do public relations, and they can make a lot of money doing that.
Or become the head of a radio network, and we get really rich, Alan. So there you go.
Really rich. Tell that to my heirs.
That's right. There you go. Only kidding, folks. That's the end of the Media Project for this week. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Rex Smith here from Albany, New York. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on the Media Project.
There is no joke.
Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.